Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome back to Geeking In, officially now.
He's already gone.
I'm not restarting.
Keep going. We listen to B slowly die in the background.
Officially now, your favourite fortnightly fan fest. It is true, we have moved to a fortnightly format. Thank you for everyone who checked in on us last week, but it is now officially fortnightly. I am Jay, I'm your party host, grabbing your bourbon, your beer or your brew, half sugar and oat milk, just the way you like it, and strap in for 2 weeks worth of this, which may be an overload. We may have got this horribly, horribly wrong. We'll find out in probably 6 or 7 hours when we finish. I am joined, as always, by the incredible, by the invincible, by the infamous, our futurist, our Tony Stark. How you doing, T?
Hello, listeners. Hello, gents. I'm doing very well. Very happy to be here. Missed you all last week. But let's give this new format a shot.
We missed you. And we're also joined by Mr. Fantastic himself, the flexible friend, the pajamaed prince of the pause and the giggle that was promised. How you doing, B?
It's 2 weeks worth of pause, isn't it?
Hey there, JNT. I know that times are getting hard, but just believe in me, guys. Someday I'll pay the bills with this pod and we'll have it good. We'll have the life we know we should. My words are good. Hey there, JNT. I've got so much left to say. If every pod word I wrote to you, I'd take your breath away. I'd write it all. Even more love with me you'd fall. We'd have it all. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what this pod does to me. Oh, it's what you do to me. Oh, it's what this pod does to me.
I love the spoken word bit. Nathan's like that at the beginning.
So that's a shout out to our listeners from Hemel Hempstead to Dublin to Oregon, and especially Delilah by the sound of things. But what I did love about it is it started to the tune of Hey Mickey.
Look, that poor woman Delilah, right? The real woman, incidentally, has had enough creepy songs written about her. She doesn't need a special shout-out from us.
That's a Geeking In mashup, by the way.
It's a Geeking In car crash, by the way. But thank you all for continuing to rate, review, subscribe and share. And in doing so, we have crossed the threshold of over 3,000 listens worldwide now.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous, really.
It is.
And they keep coming back for your songs, B, so... I mean, minute by minute, it shows that, you know, we've got 3,000 listens for the first 6 minutes, and then by the time you finished pausing and singing, everyone just turns out.
It's saying something, isn't it?
How long it takes people to realise they've made a mistake.
Oh,
must be really hard to unsubscribe.
But more of this can be found at Geeking In Pod on both Instagram and Twitter, which is where you can go to get involved in the conversation. And at Jude C55 got involved in the conversation. Jude C55 tweeted at us
I think your pronunciation is all wrong.
Dash dot dot.
put the emphasis on the wrong dot. It's all over the place.
I missed that. Can you just repeat that again, Joe?
Yes, that was dot dot. No, T. I hear you. You have a. You've broken the code.
Fluent in Morse code. Jay.
There's like two of us.
It's been 2 weeks. I've made new friends. I do a different pod now.
What? Are you cheating on us?
No, we're the backslide. He's cheating on them.
She said that she loves geeking in pod. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow. Which case, dot, 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 dash, dash, dot, dot, dash, dash, dash.
That Oi, that dot. Kind of language might be fine for your OnlyFans, but it's not all right on this pod. Honestly, potty mouth. Sorry. But at Geeking in Pod is where you can find where we are on everything, including our Linktree link that takes you to everywhere we are, including Teesprings, where we sell our mugs, our T-shirts, and our masks. And the T-shirts, oh, this is awful, come in such big sizes that if you wanted to hide the sword of power down your back in doing so, you could.
Oh,
do.
Dear.
What?
Oh, dear.
Well, you see, I was going to do, my brain went to, you know, their delivery goes everywhere. It goes across the universe. And speaking of the universe, but I'm pretty sure I did that when we were talking about the kids reboot of Masters of the Universe. So I didn't feel like I could do it again. So I had to come up with that one.
I would have taken the rerun, to be honest, but hey.
Well, it's not a rerun. It's a reboot. It's a continuation of the original story. Continuation of the original filmation, 1984, 86. He-Man Adventures, part 82, two
maybe.
Of Masters of the He-Man and the Master of the Universe Revelations dropped on Netflix. Now, part one, the first five episodes. Mm-hmm. Created some worry in the fan base. Mm-hmm. He-Man dies in, spoilers, the first and the fifth episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty bold to kill He-Man twice in half a season. And it was very much Teela's story, which you can imagine He-Man fans weren't all very happy with. However, with the second half now dropping, with the full story available, it does go some places. B, so did part two redeem part one? Do you feel it needed redeeming? And if so, did it do the job?
Well, firstly, I felt a little bit lost watching the first episode of part two. There was a recap, and suddenly seeing Prince Adam, spoilers, on the screen when I thought he was dead, did make me wonder what on earth's gone on and whether I'd skipped an episode or something like that. So I did actually stop it and then go back and watch the last episode again just to refresh and then start again. But I actually genuinely loved it. I don't think part one wasn't all that bad. I thought it was good in many things. It was trying something different. I thoroughly enjoyed part two. Bring it on. Is there going to be a part three? Can't wait.
I mean, it's open, isn't it? They've kind of left the door open for the next episode and the next big bad, if you will.
Tech-based, yeah.
T, you have said before that you didn't have quite as an emotional connection to He-Man as you had with Transformers, for instance. Mm-hmm. How did you find this?
So Firstly, yeah, I'll echo that thing about the lack of a recap. Very weird move not to do that, especially because they had the kids' animation one come out in the middle of it. So me, having not seen any He-Man for, you know, like 30 years, have had a He-Man show and then another He-Man story, and then I'm trying to remember, wait, is this the Skeletor? That's the brother of He-Man's dad, or is this, that's the other one? I can't, what's going on? Yeah, so that was a bizarre move. So I liked the, yeah, without having really watched the cartoon as a kid, I just had a ton of the toys. I really liked the part one, and I think I liked part two even more. I think this is like, for me, this is exactly what I want. I want this kind of, you know, it felt like both a kind of grown-up modern treatment, so a really interesting story on its own, but of like a franchise that so many people love. I want this for Transformers. I want Kevin Smith to now reboot Transformers. The comic I recommended a little while back, More Than Meets the Eye, is exactly that. It's, you know, like a grown-up interpretation of Transformers. So it was great. I really enjoyed it. I'd be quite happy if, you know, I don't feel it needs a part three. I'd be quite happy if this was it. You know, this was the reboot and it was really interesting and it was really well done and Mark Hamill came back and all that stuff. This has now relaunched interest in the franchise and we get, you know, even more different interpretations. That would be a really, really cool way forward as well. I quite liked that little line at the end where we're doing spoilers, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So when He-Man and Skeletor were fighting and Skeletor's convinced, you know, that this part for them, and He-Man goes, "This isn't about us. It's not us, or not our story." I can't remember exactly his words. But it was just like, yes, it's the masters of the universe. It's a big collective story, you know. That was pretty cool. They gave you all the fan moments, didn't they? So you got to see He-Man and Skeletor have a big battle. You got to see Skeletor's turn and sort of turn back. That was quite cool. You know, just that moment of him turning up in cuffs in front of the royal family, that I thought was really cool and powerful. There were some of those moments where, He-Man and Skeletor are fighting Evil-Lyn to the death just to keep her distracted, and every second is precious. And Teela's having this like conscious of faith and doubting herself and having a little chat with her dad. At which point, you know, your brain is sort of thinking, no, surely she knows that potentially these two aren't in that much danger, or they are, and you're fucking risking it over this thing. Just get on with the job, man. Just go ahead and do it. So that stuff was a bit weird. It didn't quite line up for me, the sense of danger. And the battle, the big battle that went on, so not within Castle Grayskull, but outside where all the armies kind of came together, that seemed to lack any kind of... I don't know, I could have done without that, because suddenly you had all these villagers turning up. Great, that's really powerful. And then you've got the evil army, but then are all the villagers survived completely? No real damage happens? There's no real stakes there? It didn't feel like it did anything?
What?
That's how I thought
that was the best bit. I mean, you know, when He-Man's mom dropped the bomb was definitely the Avengers, you know, on your left cap moment.
Oh yeah, with Ram Man.
Yeah, brilliant.
I only know Ram Man, funnily enough, from the kids' cartoon with what's her name, Ram Mam. So I liked it just from that. Anyway, love the show. Bring it. I'm happy to have more. I'm happy to, you know, that it's going to reinvigorate the franchise. Hopefully, it does. But also maybe it will reinvigorate a lot of franchises, kind of give an understanding that, hey, you know, let's have Kevin Smith do Thundercats, or someone else take this and do something with Thundercats with this idea, with this in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the fact that it was a continuation in the sense of... So one of the things we've talked about us loving with The Mandalorian is the feeling of Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau opening their toy box and playing with their Star Wars action figures, you know, basically being what they're doing. And in a sense, this was the same thing. You know, there were glimpses at the very least of all of your favorite toys, you know, even down to some of the vehicles and, you know, some of the things that didn't get any real screen time in the original cartoon, but there was a toy of it, so you loved it. So, you know, the fact that, you know, Spycor and Spidor and various other people were flying around and jumping around was just incredible to see. Some of the dialogue was not even trying to be double entendre. So Fisto, for instance, played by Ralph Garman, who is Kevin Smith's Babble buddy on Hollywood Babylon and is absolutely brilliant, also on Family Guy and The Orville and various other things. He did not hold back with the fisting puns and jokes and stuff. You know, the fact that you've got the Queen, whose name I've forgotten, Queen Marlena, is it? Or am I thinking about something else?
Yeah, I can't remember her name either.
King Randor.
Mom. Yeah, He-Man's mom.
So she's played by Alicia Silverstone. So obviously at some point, you know, she swoops down in the fighter that's was a toy. Obviously because, you know, she's from Earth, she was an astronaut, she was a pilot, so of course she's in that.
Is that a thing that you guys already knew? He-Man's half human?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. Or Adam's half human.
Yeah, it's her backstory is in one of the cartoons. She swoops down and shoots this huge monster that's about to attack her husband, and says, as she kind of nukes him and flies off, like, ugh, as if, which is kind of, you know, straight out of Clueless. There's just before the "it's not about us" line is Skeletor going, "Let this be our final battle," which is again straight out of the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Yeah, movie.
So it's you know, chock full of nods and, you know, loving little notes to kind of that whole kind of genre and that kind of time frame. And it's kind of a, you know, it's a Kevin Smith 90s love letter as well as a Masters of the Universe love letter in itself. I mean, watching it all, you almost feel like stopping it after five episodes when it did was bordering on trolling rather than anything else. It feels like you know exactly the reaction that you are going to get from the fan base by dropping half of the series, the half where Adam and Prince Adam and He-Man are barely in, and starts with and finishes with him getting what looks like killed, rather than anything more. So it's really interesting kind of decision, and it does feel as if it's kind of like, you know, they're going to be so fucking gross. Knowing that you've got kind of the second half in the bag, which is going to land a little bit more.
I mean, it got people talking about it, didn't it?
Yeah. And continually, again, you know, one of the things we've talked about with Netflix shows and the bulk drops is you've kind of got a cycle where everyone's like absolutely hot about it, and then it all dies down again. Mm-hmm. Whereas this kept it in the balance for quite a while, I think, just because everyone was so full of conversation about it. It is interesting that they've done a very different origin for Skeletor in this. So the him being Keldor, the brother of Randor, was kind of canon.
Right.
This one hints at what we saw in the comic, the Revelations comic, which is that Skeletor is from an alien planet of skeleton-faced people. And he is saved from that, and kind of empowered and taught the evil ways by Hordak. and the Horde, which is when we see him appear to save Evil Lyn, which is why he's wearing the Hordak badge. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end, when we see Motherboard, kind of step up and kind of, you know, techno him, you can see the Horde badge on her, which kind of suggests that he is back under the thrall of the Horde. And Hordak is on his way. So yeah, it's I thought it was interesting. I thought it kind of kept things going.
The skull face thing sort of reminds me. I could have done without Evil Lyn making
the sex scene.
Yeah.
The sex scene was a little bit bizarre.
It was also like you also couldn't look away because you're like, what are the logistics of this skeleton faced man? Is she gonna kiss? How is she gonna? What?
I mean, it's when they get into foreplay, because I mean, I don't know if he's got a tongue.
Exactly.
Although, if he's the most evil person in the area in the world, is he really thinking about, you know, making sure she has a good time too?
Yeah. Oh, well, he's probably got a boner, hasn't he?
You know, he's been waiting on that one.
I had it written 2 weeks ago, guys.
Yep. He's got the ultimate power and he gives it up just to shag Evil Lyn. Feels a bit, kind of weird. Mm.
He's a bit of a cop out, wasn't it?
Especially because there was this thing about he's refusing to let it go. Do you know what I mean? He's just absolutely not. He's so fucking attached to the power. He just won't let it go. So that's what he let it.
Show me all of the times that the power was returned, willingly or unwillingly. Mm. I mean, is that just like a sex reel? Is that what you learned from that? Eternia version of YouPorn just turned on and showed all of the ways people were depowered. It just felt, I mean, if that was going to be their relationship, it felt like that would have happened willingly or coercively before now.
I mean, I thought it had. I thought the implication was that they were shagging before. She said something about, we haven't gone back to our favorite position or something.
Maybe I was too freaked out by the fact that what was happening for me to pick that up.
Yeah.
Because it was a little bit bizarre.
Could happily have done without that one, definitely.
But yeah, I think it was good. I think it did a good landing. I think I'd be interested. But to your point, I'd be interested to see this logic of just picking up from where we were and continuing the story is quite an interesting one. And I don't know if it would happen with many other franchises, but just, let's tell more Thundercats. Let's tell more Mask. Let's tell more any of these things.
Because it's always a restart, isn't it? It's always here's a new telling of it. And I think, and I guess it's about knowing why you're doing it. So if it's hey, this worked for kids 30 years ago, I wonder if it'll work for kids today. Fine, do a restart. That. So the other He-Man show makes sense. But if it's hey, I'm nostalgia mining here, so I want those same people to now go and buy toys or whatever, then it makes sense to kind of appeal to that. I mean, that's what a lot of fan fiction was back in the day, right? All of it was, set within the universe of.
And even in Skeletor getting on in the Castle Grayskull.
I assume that's why the fan fiction world began. It was... That's actually true, right? Slash fiction was the origin, right? It was all like Kirk and Spock shagging.
But I mean, that logic of, in the same way we've talked about, you don't need to see the pearls drop in Batman anymore. You don't need to see Uncle Ben laid out on the floor. He doesn't need to give the power and responsibility speech. you know, let's take it these things are understood by everyone in the audience and move on. Yeah, that logic of, you know, hey, you know that thing you watched ages ago? Here's another bit of it.
I mean, so even as someone who hadn't watched it, I didn't feel confused by it. I've definitely missed a lot of the references you guys have missed, but that only makes me want to go back and watch some of the show, and that's certainly a good thing as well. So, you know, you can tell it without having to retell it.
Yeah, well, that wasn't... I would never... It never felt like too much of a sequential show when watching it.
Mm.
So, yeah, there was, you know, things like, you know, and here's the origin of his mum, and here's the origin of She-Ra, and here's, you know, all of those sort of things.
So, I mean, that's his mum thing's a perfect example, actually. So I was watching this show and I went, oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. And I had it in my mind to ask you if that was a new bit of canon or if that was all in the old one. But either way, it didn't take me out of the show. If it was new, great. If it was old, that's really cool as well, you know. Mm. And think, you know, like Hordak, actually. So that might have been quite obscure, but because of the She-Ra show and everything, you know, people are aware of that because the fandom moves on and different parts of it become popular over time.
Yes.
You know, it could be like the Adult Swim parody of it that became popular. It doesn't matter. That understand what's going on in the zeitgeist, understand how what people are thinking and build on that. It's very cool.
I agree. So yes, I think it's definitely worth a watch. I might at some point go back and watch it from beginning to end again.
Same.
So you guys binged all part two?
Big fun.
Did you binge all of part two?
I did.
So you know where I come from now, dude.
I think I did 3 sessions of it, actually. I don't think I did it in one go.
I've known where you've come from with these things before, but it's easier, you know, 5 half-hour episodes than it is, you know, 10 hour-long Iron Fists.
Oh well,
Fisto.
There goes your box set Christmas present then.
No, I mean, please do. There's always tables that need straightening. I could use it as a bedside lamp. Oh, except his fist very rarely lights up. So. But yeah, no, I think it was a good telling of the story. I'm interested to see whether we feel the same about the next topic, though. So the other thing that's dropped on Netflix is Cowboy Bebop, the live action version of the cult anime hit. One of the first recommendations T gave us on this show, all the way back in April of last year, of 2020, just a few weeks before She-Ra and Princess of Power. We finally have our live-action Spike Spiegel. We finally get to look around the Bebop in real life. Mm. Now, we're not going to go spoiler deep into this because, well, T hasn't watched them all. But it's the first 4 you've seen, is that right?
Yes, the first 4.
So we'll talk a little bit, kind of like, you know, the similarities, the differences, the bits that we can do, and the comparison between where we are. B, you and I have watched all 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But B, you've not. Have you watched any of the anime?
No. So I've just watched live action.
So we've got an avid fan of the anime. Mm-hmm. In T, who's watched almost half of the episode so far. Mm-hmm. I recently watched the anime. Really enjoyed it, as I've spoken about on here, available in our archives, and have watched all of Bebop. And then B, you have, this is your introduction to the Cowboys and the Syndicate and everyone else. T, how have you found so far the adventures of Spike and the gang?
So straight up, I fucking love it. I absolutely love it. I think I was going in positive. I was always kind of probably going to love it unless it was awful. Because I love that world, and I love, you know, and also I've talked about this in the past before, you know, I always feel like it doesn't detract from the thing you love, you know, that my anime is still there for me as well. So it's another interpretation. So seeing it in live action is very cool. I think John Cho, I mean, one thing he really adds to the to Spike is he's having a really good time with it. So, you know, he's smiling and laughing as he's going, and Spike's kind of got that humor about him, which is a little bit different from the Spike I'm used to, who's a bit sort of externally grumpier. And I like it. I really like that he's brought a bit of himself into this. Seeing the stuff in live action, seeing, you know, the ship, seeing the Bebop, seeing the Swordfish, all of that stuff, great. I think the casting's really good. I struggle a little bit with the action. I think the only place it loses out a little bit for me is the like the fighting, actually, the fight choreography, where nothing seems to like have an impact. So it's all a little bit too smooth and a little bit too slow, and you know, it just doesn't feel at all visceral. And the anime really did, and we know you can do that. You know, it's mostly like Jeet Kune Do, right? And that has, you know, literally pick a Bruce Lee movie, man. Pick a thing and just fucking copy it, you know. And I think they could have saved some of that even in the editing. You know, you could have sped up a few things and you know, paused a set just that second on a punch or whatever. So that's what was missing a little bit for me. But apart from that, so far, what I've seen, it's a reshuffle of the show and the movie and stuff like that. And I'm very happy with that. Vicious's casting is the only one I'm a little bit in doubt of. Vicious doesn't feel threatening to me yet. Vicious feels like a bit of a joke. And that's a shame. Vicious wasn't really my favorite part of the show anyway. So really, I'm here to see like Spike and Jet sitting around the Bebop, you know, moaning about how there's no beef in their black peppers, that kind of stuff. That's the stuff I love. You know, the real like slow burn. You're just seeing the ship and they're bored and they've got no money and they're smoking or whatever. That's the stuff I really love. And whilst they have less of that, they've got this kind of comedy stuff of them just having a laugh with each other. You know, these two guys like awkwardly sitting on the couch to watch the screen. So it's giving me kind of some different bits, and I'm really enjoying it, really enjoying that side of it. I do wish they'd sort out the... It's almost when they get into a fight, I get excited because I want to see it. And then it's just so weirdly smooth that it's really disappointing. It's a very fixable problem, but it's there nonetheless. I also like, but apart from the fight cinematography, I like the cinematography in general. It's filmed like an anime, you know, the camera angles, the way these things are set up. It's really beautiful. There's a lot of scenes where you just want to pause and admire it, and it kind of goes in and out of it quite well. Yeah, I'm a fan. The reason I've not watched it isn't because I don't love it. It's genuinely because I'm trying to savor it. I'm trying to not down the whole thing in one go, because I often do that because I get panicked about spoilers and stuff like that. So I'm just slowing it down a little bit.
I think that's got some fairness to it. I struggle a little bit with they've kind of condensed 26 half-hour episodes into 10-hour-long episodes with new stuff as well. So the order on some of it is a little bit confusing for me. One of the things that I liked about the anime was the gradual growth of the team and the family and, you know, them all kind of coming together and things like that. And there's bits of it that feel a little bit hastened in this that, you know, probably like, you know, could have done with a little bit more breathing on it, I think. But it's you know, there's some the majority of the stuff I like. One of the things that I feel is I'm choosing my words carefully here because I don't want to spoil anything. But one of the things that I feel is overexposed is the relationship between Spike, Vicious, and Julia. Mm. It's a hanging shadow in the anime.
Yep.
You don't really get a lot of straight answers to. Mm-hmm. And fairly early on, they start really kind of layering these relationships and, you know, them fitting together. And Julian being from, you know, this ghost who, you know, is she alive? Is she dead? Yeah. Is she, you know, what happened to her? Yeah. To, you know, Mrs. Vicious. I feel was a bit of a weird starting point. And it never really, it feels like it earns that for me going through, but we'll have that conversation when you've finished watching it. Mm-hmm. And Ayn, just kind of like, you know, at one point he's there. you know, what's that? It's my dog. Okay. So there's stuff like that. I mean, it's really bizarre to watch live action versions of some of the stuff that you see on the anime series. And there are some great bits that they build in. But it doesn't feel like anything has a chance to breathe, I think, is my slight issue with it. It did take me a few sittings to get through. A part of that's because I wasn't in a position to, you know, I didn't wish to rush it. But there were a few that I didn't feel I could kind of do back to back, really. Because the pacing sometimes, you know, a little bit kind of slow, quick, slow. And it kind of took me out of the rhythm of it ever so slightly. Especially as the more I tried to watch them collectively, the more I kind of got confused with, wait a second, that's part of this episode. And then they seem to have moved on to that being part of that episode rather than anything more. So, yeah, trying to disconnect, I think, is one of the hardest things. Now, but you wouldn't have had that problem because you haven't watched the anime yet. Mm-hmm. How did you find this, and has this made you want to go back and watch the anime?
So the answer is no. I really wanted to say that I really enjoyed it. I watched it. I watched all of it. I didn't binge it. It took me a few days. I found it confusing. It felt very much like a 60s show set in space, but with modern cameras and colorings, and it's very vibrant. Absolutely agree, the fight scenes were a little bit too slow. They could have done with a little bit more choreography, made them a little bit more exciting. I found it hard to follow, if I'm honest. Some of the things which I thought were meant to be funny, I didn't find funny. But, you know, maybe that's because I've not seen the animation. Maybe there were references to that. Thought the relationship was quite strange between Spike and Jet. That's my review.
What did you think of the Faye Valentine?
How can I put it? Interesting, I think. I mean, she's hot. But yeah, that's it.
I thought that there's a certain charm to Faye in the anime that didn't quite come across, in the sense of, you know, whatever crap she gets into, she can kind of just charm people into, you know,
yeah,
getting away with it, and, you know, really kind of barefaced with it, and, you know, knows that she can kind of talk her way out of whatever. And it just didn't quite have that personable kind of charm in the series. I think it was a little bit more of an awkward character, I thought.
Cold.
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to work out whether I think that's too harsh or not, but, you know, it's I think it's a, yeah.
So looking at Faye, I guess, as far as I've seen her, you know, I've seen up to the point where she goes to rescue the guys and stuff like that. So, you know, anime has that trope of the cocky girl character. You know, so that's Faye, and that's forgot her name now, the redhead from Neon Genesis, and, you know, all these, which doesn't, I feel like, sort of translate. And I think to translate it across, they've softened her maybe a little bit. So that moment of her sort of turning around so early on to rescue the guys, I thought, oh, is that a Faye thing already? Is she already loyal enough to these guys to want to go and save them? I don't know. One thing I just realized I forgot to mention, the music. How do you feel about the soundtrack?
I don't mind it. I don't think it's as good.
I love it. I love it.
I didn't think it was as good. I don't think it's as varied as the anime. And one of the things that really kind of took me with the soundtrack on the anime was the very eclectic nature of it. It's still cool. I didn't like it as much though.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of my summary, and, you know, it's still cool. I just didn't like it as much.
Yeah. No. So far with me, I think I've really. Does it feel like there's more coming of this, or does it feel like
yes.
This is okay? That's kind of one of the things I'm really hoping for with this, is, you know, because the Bebop chapter is closed very much in the anime. I feel like. So I think I came across Firefly and Bebop around the same time, and, you know, both similar shows and in their tones and stuff like that, and with both I kept feeling like I want to be in this world more. I want more seasons. I just want to know what these guys are up to. I don't want to see them doing anything, actually. I just want to see them each hanging around their respective ships, like trying to feed themselves, you know. I just love the way it's all set out, and of course we'll get no more Firefly, but, you know, if we're getting more of Spike and Jet beyond this original set of stories. So you've done, you know, your 20, however many episodes in a movie of Bebop. Now give us more. What else is happening with these guys? You know, do we now get to see Ayn more so, you know, that stuff in the future? That would be quite cool for me. And I was really hoping it would drive you to the anime, so I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, this makes me want to go. Basically, the people who haven't actually enjoyed the show very much, so coming out, at least coming out of it, saying, but I do want to watch the anime instead.
I might seek it out. But I mean, it does remind me of for our older listeners, Blake Seven.
Never watched it.
Before my time, sadly.
Well, there you go.
Is it full of hexagons?
Watch it and find out.
I would have thought Blake Seven is right up your alley, because it always feels early Doctor Who.
It
feels kind of
I mean, obviously
Tom Baker, Doctor Who kind of.
It's very early 80s, so I mean it's obviously
Colin Baker. Was Colin Baker a Doctor Who?
Yeah, he was.
The cricket.
No, Tom Baker.
No, wasn't who was the one with the cricket? So it was. I'm thinking colourful jacket, kind of blonde.
Oh, Davidson. Davidson. Peter Davidson.
No, after him.
The guy whose daughter is married to David Tennant. The guy with the...
No, that's Peter Davidson. It would have been...
Tom Baker, isn't it?
Colin Baker. I was right. Colin Baker.
Colin Baker.
Colin Baker.
So, Sixth Doctor. Yes. Curly hair. So that kind of era Doctor Who kind of feels Blake Seveny to me in the very small pictures and scenes that I've seen.
I generally forgotten that Doctor existed. That's so weird. I'm looking at all the Doctors in front of me now. And the Sixth Doctor, I can't think of his personality.
I remember being a little bit more austere than the Peter Davidson one and less goofy than the Sylvester McCoy one. We're all going to go off on YouTube. Sixth Doctor Colin Baker now. And
Colin Baker.
And see where he comes up with.
Maybe he never came back for those like anniversary shows or whatever. Him and Chris Eccleston.
Companions Perry Brown and Mel Bush.
Anyway, Cowboy Bebop.
Yes. I think it's one to check out. I think it's interesting. I am very interested to have another conversation with you when he finishes. It does very much open up for more adventures on almost kind of every level.
Definitely looking forward to like chatting about it an awful lot more. And B, I'm hoping to get you into the anime as well. I always feel like anime is the one. See, a live action thing of a cartoon sort of works because a cartoon is kind of drawn to be looking realistic. Anime is intentionally, you know, it's done in a way that you cannot really have, you know, you have impossible like camera angles, right?
Yeah.
So the way a camera moves in, like, say, Attack of Titan, you can't, they couldn't even map it on, a, you know, just because it's impossible things. So it's a strange one to want to adapt. But yeah, it's a universe I love so much that I'm glad it's getting more screen time. Bring it all back. Keep nostalgia mining.
Yeah, I do think it's worth checking out the series all on Netflix, so you can throw it on and you know watch the anime through. Be really interesting to kind of you know listen to your interpretation this way round. Compared to the other, but we will revisit the Bebop at some point, I am sure, to talk about it a little bit more, and whether it has hit the mark.
Better.
I
mean, it wasn't a particularly high standard to start with, but okay.
Everyone's a critic. This is why we need to do these things fortnightly now, so I can try and think up ways of getting between segments. So, yes, we have the first two episodes of Hawkeye have dropped for us to talk about. We are going to be discussing them in a certain amount of detail. So in case you have not seen them yet, we will do our recommendations. We will wish anyone who has not seen them farewell. And then we will talk about Hawkeye. So, T, let's start with you. Where would you like to go with recommendations this week?
I am going to recommend... So, if... I guess it's a bit backwards, but if you have watched the Hawkeye show and enjoyed kind of a world of... a world of superpowered beings, but isn't focused on the superpowered beings. Obviously, you can pick up the Hawkeye comic, but I recommended that already. I would also recommend Gotham Central. So there's five volumes of that, and that is essentially it's the cops of Gotham City who run all of that whilst Batman's running around. So was that written at a time where a lot of the cops were getting name checked all over the place, so you really got to know them in the Batman comics already. So they had their personalities quite developed. So it wasn't just Commissioner Gordon; you had Renee Montoya. In fact, the characters who are, you know, Harvey Bullock, who are more famous now because of things like the Gotham Show and stuff like that. But this was one of the early things of, you know, seeing these guys just trying to be cops and just trying to do their jobs and live their day-to-day lives within a world of supervillains, superheroes, and Batman, like Superman flying occasionally and that kind of stuff. And I'm really interested in that. I talk about liking the C-list heroes and villains and the kind of the street-level guys. And this is proper sort of street-level law enforcement in a world of superheroes. Five volumes. They're all... It's funny, it was written at a time where there was like a Batman crossover every year, and it was quite hard to read any other comic because you'd have to stop and kind of follow the crossover. But Gotham Central hangs together pretty well. You can read it end to end, five volumes, and it feels like a solid story throughout without needing much background. And it's a really, really fun story. Highly recommend it.
I mean, I've not spent much time in Gotham Central, but one of the things that I was being told about by someone who was doing a very good job of selling it to me, although I've not read it yet, so obviously not that good a job.
You didn't recommend it on a podcast, that's the problem.
No, that's you see where you've gone wrong. Is that it's kind of, you know, this theory that you've got this police set up who, you know, some of them don't really trust the vigilante ways of Batman. And in essence, they've got, you know, the daytime hours to crack this case, because the moment the sun goes down, mm-hmm. they know Batman's back on it and Batman's back out and Batman can do things that they cannot do. Yep. So it's kind of, you know, a little bit of a procedure or a little bit of something wider. But it's very much about them kind of in this race against time, in the sense of, if we want this person to be brought to justice and we want to take care of this, then you know, we've got a time frame on this, because as soon as the sun goes down, the bat reappears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is it's really interesting, just having yeah, the bat is there in all of it, you know, in all of their conversations, all of the things, but sometimes it's just about their relationship as well. Yeah, that is a very good pitch for it, actually. Pick it up.
Not good enough to get me to pick it up, but a good pitch all the same. To my recommendation is The Orville. So, you know, puppeted by Keith Harris. Oh no, that's Orville the duck. That's something different. So The Orville is
I don't get that reference.
I wish, you know, I could fly up, up in the sky, but I can't.
You can.
I can't.
Add it to your YouTube playlist. We're just going to be spamming you with Orville Duck things now. Yes, so The Orville is Seth MacFarlane's parody / love letter to Star Trek. It is now on Disney Plus. I thought it was three seasons, but apparently it's only two.
Is it finished? Was it two seasons and over?
I'm sure season three was going to Hulu, but I've not seen anything. So, it's due to be released March 2022. So it's not long now before season three will start. Yes. So it's the world. It's the year. I've lost it. I had it here a second ago. That's why I started with such confidence.
The future.
Yeah. 2453, I think it is. Something like that. And we are on a spaceship with a newly promoted captain and his ex-wife, who he's divorced a year ago after cheating on him, as his first officer. It's a little bit Family Guy. It's a little bit Star Trek. It's quite bizarre to watch at some points because it can't work out whether it's lampooning Star Trek or worshipping Star Trek. Yeah, and it tries to do both with the same episode, which sometimes makes it feel a little bit uneven. But it's you know, it's got some great stuff going on. It's got some fucking weird stuff going on. The one with the pheromones is Cupid's Arrow, I think it's called, is just crazy. It's a who's who of all of Seth MacFarlane's friends appearing in various roles. And as I said, it's all on Disney Plus. So go watch it, catch up before season three starts dropping in March.
The Orville came out, I think, almost exactly the same time as Discovery.
Yeah.
I think it was like the week one, episode one of both that were exactly the same time. And I remember when Discovery started, I mean, that was the first time you had Star Trek back on telly since Enterprise unceremoniously ended after four seasons. So Discovery was so different from what we're used to because I wanted to get Star Trek back again. I basically wanted TNG again. And somehow Discovery plus Orville together gave me a Star Trek experience that I wanted. And it was great to watch like the episodes back to back and like you'd end it and you go, right, okay. Combined, this is a great meal. It is nice. I stopped watching. I think I stopped watching it when Discovery got interesting enough on its own for me. Yeah. So I didn't need Orville as a palate cleanser or whatever. But I'm keen to get back onto it, I think.
It's definitely one worth kind of going back and revisiting.
It's a bit boring at times, I think. I think, you know, it tries to do big concepts and doesn't do them. But again, because it's sort of doing it in a jokey way, it's not that interesting. It doesn't, you know, there's no real stakes. And then sometimes they try and have stakes, but because it's a jokey show, it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
But I will give it another shot. Maybe it got better.
And B, what do you have?
Right. Excuse me. My recommendation this week, guys, is a show available on Amazon Prime called The Wheel of Time. It's a series based on a set of novels by a certain Robert Jordan. So it's all fantasy based, a bit like Lord of the Rings, but not as good. but
excellent recommendation.
But it's worth a watch.
I mean, if you can watch Lord of the Rings, watch Lord of the Rings. But if you can't watch Lord of the Rings, if you're trying to wait until Amazon do their Lord of the Rings show, then watch Wheel of Time.
It's quite good. I mean, season episode four is it really does pick up from episode four. So hang in there. It's a weekly drop, and so far there've been four episodes. So I've watched all four, and I'm looking forward to episode five. So that's my recommendation.
I mean the. Books are not still coming out, are they? But they carried on after he died, didn't they? After Robert Jordan, was it Brandon Sanderson picked them up, didn't he?
Yeah. I think there was a template laid down, but I think the co-author, as he's described, for the last three books, I think I'm gonna say.
So, sorry, when you say, like, Lord of the Rings, but not as good, are you referring to the show or the books?
The show. Okay. The books are good. The books are really good. The show, obviously, it's not as epic. Doesn't have as big characters, but it certainly keeps the viewer entertained.
The reason this is a really strange recommendation from you, Pete, is I was thinking about the show, and when you said on the free chat you were going to recommend it, I was like, "Oh, great! This will make me want to watch it. This is the push I needed."
No, seriously, like watch it.
by going, it's not as good as the other things you could watch.
It's slow in starting, but episode 4 is really good.
Okay. I'm all for slow shows. I've got no problem with that. Cool. It's on the list, I guess.
Is this a long list, T?
It is sadly a very long list.
Well, one thing that wasn't slow in starting was Hawkeye. First two episodes landed with a bit of a bang. So let's talk about Hawkeye. Episode 1 of Hawkeye is Never Meet Your Heroes. And started with us seeing a young child, Kate Bishop, in the Battle of New York. With some very, very cool kind of cut-in footage from the film. And then moved on to episode 2, which was Hide and Seek. B, we'll start with you. What was your feelings on Hawkeye?
I must admit, when the first sort of trailer dropped, I wasn't that into it. But having watched the first two, and oh my days, I can't wait for the next few hours. I'm actually thinking of watching it at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. I thought it was absolutely superb. I thought the chemistry between both Kate and oh my gosh, that's it, Clint Barton, was brilliant. I thought it was very action-packed. I thought it was funny, not overly funny, but funny enough. I thought the acting was brilliant. The story, as it seems, is going in a great way. It ended in I didn't understand how it ended in the second episode. Obviously, I know who the person is, but yeah, I thought it had some really great elements. I love the fact that Clint is partially deaf, although, you know, having a few scenes of why he's deaf, I don't think that did it justice. I thought a little bit more explanation, and perhaps we'll get that in the coming, you know, shows.
I really like that as an explanation. Reminded me of Archer. You know, how you're going to end up with tinnitus living the life you live.
Yeah, but seriously, it was just like a few frames though, wasn't it?
It was just... I'll let you carry on.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought the interaction between the family was great. The stepdad, brilliant. I thought it was really creepy. And you just know there's someone... Oh, I'm so hoping there's someone out there, but some bigger bad who's pulling the screens, a kind of a super villain, you know, a kingpin possibly. I can't wait for number 3 to come out. It rocked, and you know it. When Disney announced they were doing all these shows, I was thinking, no, I want the movies. I have to say, I'm so liking these TV shows. Every single time they've done it and they've done something different, I'm absolutely loving it. Loving it.
T, how did you find it?
So this is, you know, the kind of stuff that I love, right? I've talked enough about it even earlier on. And maybe I went in with slightly higher expectations. So it's not my favorite of the Disney show so far. It's not in the, I guess it's in the top 3. It's not in the top 2. Because fucking the other one was, what do you call it? What If was super inconsistent. So it was fine. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't like it as much as I wanted to like it. So I had some issues with it. I really liked Kate Bishop's character for the most part. At times, there was this kind of manic, almost like Shia LaBeouf energy, like going on, which I just you know, she felt quite inconsistent at times in terms of how she was trying to do all of that.
It's just the Transformers connection. It's transmissible.
That's all it is. They both hang out with Bumblebee and they fuck them both up. Yeah, yep. So
they both got bumbled.
So at times she was, you know, I liked her a lot. It was very cool. And at times it was like she was just doing that thing a bit too much. I really liked that she's 22 and not like a 16-year-old as young Avengers often are. But I especially like that to Hawkeye, that still means you're basically a child. It really aged me. I really felt like, oh, fuck, I relate to that. I talk to a 22-year-old person and think they're a child now. And it made me think, right, my Avengers are going old and retiring, and Iron Man's dead, and Cap's gone home and retired, and shit, it's time to move out. You know, we've talked often about being closer to Uncle Ben than Peter Parker. This really brought that home for me. It's like, oh, fuck, I'm old. So I had an existential crisis in the middle of this. Great.
And you're the youngest out of the three of us, so this is boding really well.
I mean, the reason I like this call is it makes me feel young compared to you guys, but there you go.
Oh, that's just me.
There's a lot to like. I missed that, Jay.
He's bordering on his three-quarter life crisis.
Oh, gee. Does that mean I've only got a quarter left? Oh.
Well, I plan to live forever, so we're fine with that. Overall, I liked it. I wish I liked it a little bit more. There were chunks of it that were a bit slow. Pacing was a bit strange. I liked Rogers the musical. That was fun. I didn't get why she put the whole suit on, like, at the beginning. The mask would have done it. The whole thing about, hey, you just look like another waiter here. Surely just putting the mask on would have made you look like another waiter. Why put this awkward suit on? I didn't quite understand. I kept thinking we're going to see a thing where the suit has gadgets in it. That's why she put it on. It's going to have a knife that fucking pops out of it or something. It didn't. It's good. It's not great. I hope it gets better.
Yeah, I mean, I felt incredibly satisfied after the first episode. I probably would have been all right if that's the only one that had dropped. I thought it was a good entry point. I thought that, you know, the pacing of it was quite good. You know, a lot of stuff happened. You met the key people. You got to see the Rogers the musical piece, which was amazing. The second one was a little bit weirder in regards to trying to set up like backstory and exposition and blah, blah, blah. So that kind of slowed it down a little bit for me, I think. But no, it was enjoyable. I think it's probably my third favorite at the moment, behind WandaVision and Loki. But I'm interested to see where it's going. I think it's nicely unhindered by superpowers. Mm-hmm. So I think it works perfectly because you don't have, you know, and he can hit things really, really hard, or, you know, he's a super blah, blah, blah. So I think that makes it quite an interesting story. Like you, I got a bit confused with why I put the whole suit on. It just feels time, whilst, you know, they've got 90 seconds to rob this place and find whatever they're looking for. And she manages to put a whole suit on in less than 90 seconds and then start fighting people. You know, something that just kind of covers her identity would have been fine. But again, I was, you know, maybe it's bulletproof, maybe it's stab proof, maybe it's something else. So yeah, it's enjoyable. I think what was his name? Jack Dukens, the stepdad, was great. He's swordsman in the comic, as you can pick up from all the way through, You know, if even if you didn't know that, you kind of knew he was a guy with an unhealthy obsession with swords. Mm-hmm.
I really liked the whole picking up on, oh no, he's hiding something. Oh, he's better than this. It's like the, you know, it's the old Kung Fu stuff, right? They brought it back in a really nice way.
Extraordinary. You really are amazing. Why are you smiling? Because I know something you don't. What's that? I'm not left-handed. Yeah, it had a... anything that makes me think of the Princess Bride is yeah, you know, all right in my book. I'm interested to see where it goes. I think that Kingpin could be this season's Mephisto.
Let's hope not.
I'm still not over the Fantastic Four in WandaVision. That's still the one that kind of, you know, even more than Mephisto, the whole kind of, I know someone and they're really good with astro-navigational experts. Her name's whatever. That's still the one that hurts the most out of all of them for me. So I'm not kind of building my hopes up on too many cameos. But, you know, I'm enjoying the energy. I'm enjoying the playfulness of it. I'm enjoying the stupidity of it. You know, like people following her back to her apartment and her name being on the buzzer because she dropped the dog off. It's fun so far. It feels like six is going to go really, really quickly.
Yeah, we're nearly halfway through.
Yeah.
And, it's, you know, strange, I know you did a double drop for this because you didn't need to. WandaVision needed a double drop or a triple drop, really. Yeah. And they gambled and not then didn't. And here you really didn't need to.
No, I think they could have got away with just one on this one. Mm. Although I'm not sure if the second one would have stood up on its own in the same sort of way. I don't think the first one needed a second one. I'm not sure if the second one needed the first, if you know what I mean.
What just occurred to me as I did this list of my, you know, favorite shows, I completely forgot about Falcon and the Winter Soldier because that's how little I cared about that one.
I liked it. I just didn't, you know, it ended in a strange place.
Completely forgot about it.
I was trying to work out what your when you said third, I'm like, what's the other two? And then I kind of went, oh, it's probably the same as mine.
Yeah.
In the sense that What If and Falcon and the Winter Soldier aren't really getting anywhere near it.
Nope.
Even though Baron Zemo's dancing was great.
I can forget that.
And the fact that Bucky's arm has a quick release button. They didn't know about.
Brilliant. Who knew?
The Dora Milaje knew about, but no one else did. It was like, click.
I take it back. That was a good show. I forgot how good it was.
Bronze Tiger was good as well. Bronze Tiger? Or am I thinking about... I might be thinking about DC with Bronze Tiger.
Bronze Tiger Suicide Squad.
Who's the guy who was in pretending to be in? I'm sure we've had this conversation. I couldn't remember it last time we had it on the pod.
I can't remember. But hey. Anyway.
Anyway. It'll be interesting to see how it plays through. It is quite fun. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Whether it should, I guess we'll find out. I liked, there was a certain bit of, you know, him getting captured by the tracksuit mafia and them kind of, you know, him strapped to the chair and them kind of going, no, we're interrogating you. And I loved it because it felt like a throwback to
Black Widow
in the Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 30 seconds away from this guy telling me everything that I need to know. No, we've captured you. Don't you understand?
Sure, yeah.
That That was so well. I mean, that was her thing, you know. And it's weird she got known for the back, for the flip and the all that kind of stuff. Whereas actually, you know, they set that up and then she did it again to Loki. That was the thing that was so beautifully done.
We haven't mentioned, and it's probably a good time to say, Scarlett Johansson, off of settling her deal, which, B, I know you were very worried about, is in works with Disney and Marvel for a top secret project.
Oh, I read about this. The okay, Alpha Flight or A-Force? I can't remember.
I mean, A-Force is the female...
That's the one.
...centric Avengers team. How Alpha does that fit with Canadians. Her? Yeah. You know, hey, you know, got issue number one, as we've talked about. Alpha Flight's coming. I believe Alpha Flight's coming. and I cannot wait to see Puck in a very badly CG'd Pip the Troll kind of way. So what do we think then? Because, you know, that's got to be after she died.
See, I loved, we all loved Endgame so much. I felt very precious about people's last appearances and stuff. And I kept saying things like, you know, don't take away their sack. Don't take away Tony and Widow sacrifices, you know, don't bring them back for that reason, and don't take away Cap's happy ending. Don't just leave it all alone, or leave it alone for like 20 years and then bring him back because, you know, the time has passed and the audience has changed or whatever. But, you know, the Widow film came out afterwards, and it was all right. It wasn't great, but it was fine. So weirdly, I don't feel so precious about that anymore. So if there is some bizarre way of bringing her back, you know, I feel like it wouldn't take away from her sacrifice. She still made the sacrifice.
I mean, I'm assuming that the way they do it is what they've already shown us in What If, which is multiverse, and she comes out of one world and slips into the other.
Yeah. Or even if it is somehow this, you know, because her death was a bizarre, you know, sacrificed for a stone and all this kind of stuff. You know, maybe there was some way in which when Cap returned it, you get back the sacrifice, you know. We don't know the cosmic rules of all of this stuff. They didn't set it out. We could get the same Black Widow back.
Yep. Maybe she'll pop out in one of these multiverse holes that are expected to appear in Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Just riding on the back of Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
I mean, she is Black Widow. Does that not make her Spider-Verse?
Has Black... Ooh, that's very good. Now, that is a link.
That's how you do it, Jay, for God's sake.
Thank you for the affirmation. It's a shame it's coming hour number three of the show.
At this point, it's only us and Universal Collector here.
He's applauding. I can hear it. I can feel it. and that trailer did drop. The Far From No Way Home trailer seems to be breaking all kinds of records. Mm. The tickets went on sale and then have been scalped on eBay.
Yeah.
So it's doing well.
Lots of hype. Lots of hype.
Yeah.
I am a bit worried, to be honest, for it. A bit scared for it, to be honest.
Yeah, tell me your worries and then I'll tell you mine.
I just don't think it's going to live up to the hype. I think people are expecting far too much from it. And I'm not sure if it's going to live up to it.
I worry that it's got a lot going on. It could get very messy. I know that this is a Marvel and Sony film rather than Sony doing it on their own. But Sony have a habit of
That's very true.
Overcooking Spider-Man films of like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then he comes in, and then this happened, and this happened, and that happened, and it feels Spider-Man 3, Amazing Spider-Man 2 level complexity already. It's a lot of moving pieces by the looks of things.
I mean, if you're going in because you're desperate to see Tobey Maguire suit up as Spider-Man again, you know, he's not, even if that cameo is true and he's definitely in it, blah, 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 you're not going to get the amount of stream time that you want to get. You need to just go back and watch the Tobey Maguire films if you want to watch that again. You know what I mean?
But it's interesting in the sense that they seem to just assume that everyone has. So it doesn't sound like, you know, you're going to get much in regards to backstory of Dr. Octopus rather than, you know, he's from that thing.
Yep.
Go and watch that.
And I'm glad of that. That's how I'd rather do it. You know, again, it's what we said earlier. It's understanding the zeitgeist, understanding that people will know that connection even if they haven't watched that film.
And can find it. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all over Disney, they're all over Netflix. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find it.
I think I didn't think Spider-Man Far From Home was a particularly good film. And all the box office records it was breaking and things like that, I just thought it's because it was off the back of Avengers, really.
Yeah.
You know, it was literally Endgame's leftover money. You could have released anything at that point. It would have broken all the records and stuff like that. The next MCU film. You want to see what happened after Stark died, you know? So it's interesting. This is standing up on its own. And also, so I remember when Civil War came out, and it came out straight after, I think it was the first film after Age of Ultron. And it felt like, oh, wait, this isn't just another Marvel film. Because up until that point, the individual hero films were just, you know, like a solo outing.
Especially the sequels of the individual hero films.
Yeah, I mean, the exception, funnily enough, was Winter Soldier, because you had, because it was, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. collapsed, and Widow was in it, and Fury was in it, and it was like, oh,
okay. And here's Black Panther.
Well, that was later, yeah, so in Winter Soldier felt a bit like Avengers, like 1.5, leading up to Avengers 2 being Age of Ultron, but then Civil War came out, and I was like, oh no, that was Avengers 2, you know. Like the Age of Ultron was an adventure they had on the side, but if you're going to see what actually happened to these guys, you need Civil War. So this one now feels like the next, you know, it feels like the next Avengers film, the next thing that's going to really throw the universe of the MCU out of whack and, you know, have these kind of huge lasting effects, the way Civil War did, the way Winter Soldier did. So yeah, very, very, very excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're all on bated breath waiting for the next film that shows us what Phase 4 looks like and how it all fits together and, you know, who the big bad is and, you know, what's the overarching story and all the rest of it. And it's, yeah, so far it's been interesting films, but standalone films. Mm-hmm. Nothing that's a bigger piece of the puzzle. So yeah, right. We'll see whether this moves us on.
So Phase 2 were just sequels to Phase 1, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Phase 3 had, you know, now we're going to introduce a ton of new characters now. Yeah, that's right. So Phase 4 is going a bit both ways. Yeah, it's very cool. To me, Phase 4 feels like the TV shows, actually. That's what I've been thinking of as Phase 4 all the time.
Yeah, but again, those, you know, we're waiting to see the kind of the wider impact and ramifications. So, you know, how does the creation of the Scarlet Witch, how does Loki and Kang all actually translate into something more? How does What If with, you know, there is a multiverse and here's all the various possibilities. How do all of these things translate into like a storytelling thread rather than bits?
I love that you can now basically tell the story in the format in which probably best tells the story. Now, I know there's a lot of, you know, it's all financial calculations and things like that. And this is the Sony thing, so there's never going to be a TV show. But, you know, you want to tell a bit of a story thread and you now get to decide whether this needs high budget, big blockbuster, it's that kind of story, or if this is a bit of a slow burn, get to know the characters kind of thing, and we'll put it on Disney Plus on a show. I think that's really cool.
And it'd be interesting to see what the drivers on that are, because I still think Eternals was a better TV show than it was.
Totally agree.
But we shall see. We have episode 3 landing in mere hours' time. I think this is the first one that you'll be watching at 8 o'clock as soon as it streams. Even WandaVision, you were later on in the day.
Yeah. I'm just excited for it. So, yeah.
I mean, we've been recording for about 16 hours. Has it not come up yet? B, have you missed it?
What?
Episode 4's out, B. We've been here for that long.
But we will be back to talk about episode 3 and 4 in 2 weeks' time. So, if you miss us next week, feel free to go through the archives, listen to some of our hits and misses from previous. The Star Wars special is still very good. We will speak to you in 2 weeks' time. Until then, continue to look after yourself and each other, and you know, whichever variant we're at in that time, we'll talk about. So, bye-bye.
Adios.
Cheerio. We'll be right back.